Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. There we go. That's better. Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Giri Varadhari. Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Giri Varadhari. Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Shri Kishore Kishore Ki Jai. Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahamsa Parivrajakacharya Ashtotara Shata Shri Srimad His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur Ki Jai. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam namaskritya naram chaiva narottamam devim sarasvatim vyasam tato jayam mudiraye nashta praisha badreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya bhagavati uttama shloke bhaktir bhavati naishtiki. Hare Krishna. Today we're reading from Canto 10, Chapter 14, Text 4. Shreya Shritim Bhakti Mudasyate Vibho. Karishyanti Ye Kevala Bhoda Rabdhaye. Teshama so kleshana eva shishyate. Anyadhyatastula Tushavagatinam. Shreya Shritim Bhakti Mudasyate Vibho. Krishyanti Kevala Bhoda Labdhaye. Teshama Sokleshala Eva Shishyate. Nanyadhyatastula Tushavagatinam. Please chant. Shreya Shritim Bhakti Mudasyate Vibho. Krishyanti Ye Kevala Bhoda Labdhaye. Yeshamu Kveshala Eva Shishyate. Nanyadhyatastula Tushavagatina. Shritim Bhakti Mudasyate Vibho. Krishyanti Kevala Bhoda Labdhaye. Deshama Sokleshala Eva Shishyate. Nanyadhyatastula Tushavagatina. The word for word, Shreya, of supreme benefit, Shritim, the path, Bhaktim, devotional service, Udasya, rejecting, Te, they, Vibho, O Almighty Lord, Krishyanti, struggle, Ye, who, Kevala, exclusive, Bodha, of knowledge, Labdhaye, for the achievement, Desham, for them, Asau, this, Kleshala, botheration, Eva, merely, Shishyate, remains, na, nothing, anyat, other, yata, just as, stula tusha, empty husks, avaghatinam, for those who are beating. In the translation, my dear Lord, devotional service unto you is the best path for self-realization. If someone gives up that path and engages in the cultivation of speculative knowledge, he will simply undergo a troublesome process and will not achieve his desired results. As a person who beats an empty husk of wheat cannot get grain, one who simply speculates cannot achieve self-realization. His only gain is trouble. In the purport by the disciples of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada. Loving service to the Supreme Person is the natural and eternal function of every living entity. If a person renounces his own constitutional function and instead laboriously seeks so-called enlightenment through impersonal speculative knowledge, His result is simply the trouble and bother that come from following an artificial process. A fool may beat an empty husk, not knowing that the grain has already been removed. Similarly, foolish is the person who throws his mind again and again into the pursuit of knowledge without surrendering to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. For it is the Supreme Personality of Godhead who is the very substance and goal of knowledge, just as grain is the substance and goal of the entire agricultural effort. Vedic knowledge, or indeed material science, without the personality of Godhead is exactly like an empty and useless husk of wheat. One may argue that by practicing yoga or cultivating impersonal knowledge, one can acquire prestige, wealth, mystic powers, or even impersonal liberation. But these so-called gains are actually useless, because they do not situate the living being in his constitutional position of loving service to the Supreme Lord. Therefore, such results, being superfluous to the living being's essential nature, are impermanent. As stated in the Nrsimha Purana, Patreshu Pushpeshu Paleshu Toyeshu Akrita Artam Kriyate Prayatnaha. Since the primeval personality of Godhead is easily attained by offering him such things as leaves, flowers, fruits, and water, which are all found without difficulty, why does one need to endeavor for liberation separately? Although the process of devotional service to Lord Krishna is very simple, it is extremely difficult for stubborn conditioned souls to completely humble themselves before the Supreme Personality of Godhead and absorb themselves 24 hours a day in his loving service. The mood of loving service is anathema to belligerent conditioned souls determined to defy God and enjoy. When such stubborn, conditioned souls attempt to bypass surrendering to God through proud attempts at philosophical speculation, austerity, and yoga, they are turned back to the material platform by the powerful laws of God and violently merged into the heaving ocean of insignificance called the material world. Om Agyanati Mirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitangena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadati Swa Padantikam. Hey Krishna Karuna Sindha Dhina Bandho Jagatpate Mukham Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langay Teganim Yat Kripam Tamaham Vande Shri Gurum Dina Taranam. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prashtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swamin Iti Namine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prashtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Iti Namine Vanchakalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Namo Mahavadanyaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namne Gaura Tushe Namaha. Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ram Hare Ram 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 Hare Hare. So Hare Krishna, I'd like to beg all of your blessings. Again, somehow or other you keep tolerating me. I'm very much all of your junior, and I hope to be able to speak something that is at least for my own purification. And if it is also enlivening for you, then that's wonderful. So, we have crossed to the second half, so to speak, of the Brahma Vimohan Leela. The Brahma Vimohan Leela is now taken place. Brahma has been bewildered, and now coming out of his bewilderment, he's offering many, many wonderful prayers to Krishna. And so this is just the beginning of those prayers. Lord Brahma has just started to glorify and Sometimes he's asking questions, rhetorical questions that are meant to glorify Krishna, and other times he's glorifying bhakti. Here, in particular, he is, in the previous verse and in this verse, he's offering a very nice juxtaposition of Gyan Marg and Bhakti Marg, of the path of impersonal understanding and the study of the Vedas to gain knowledge of the Absolute Truth, Brahman, and the path of falling in love with Brahman through bhakti, the Param Brahman. And I found this juxtaposition, this way that he has presented this, to be quite interesting, especially when we look at the way he started these two verses. So, in the beginning of text 3, the first phrase that is given is Gyane Prayasam, which means for those who reject Gyan and who just outright reject this idea of trying to understand through elimination what Brahman is, they can practice bhakti yoga. He says, cast out this Gyan. Gyan Prayasam. Prayasam means to give up. Udapasya means to give up. Prayas means to over-endeavor. So Gyane Prayasa, the over-endeavor for knowledge, give that up, Udapasya. The bhaktas, they give that up. And then in the beginning of this work, in the beginning of this verse, he says, Shreya Shrutim Bhaktim Udasya. Udasya means the same thing as Udapasya. It's just another way to put it because Sanskrit is very fluid. Udasya also means to give up. But in this verse, he's speaking about the people who give up the Shreya Shrutim, that most auspicious path, the highest path of bhakti. Shreya Shrutim Bhaktim Udasya. For those who give that up, he says, it's like stula pushavag atinam. It's like someone who has a bunch of wheat husks or rice husks and beats them expecting to get some grain. The only result is pain in the hands. The only thing you'll get, you won't get any wheat, you won't get rice, you'll end up with the same thing and you'll just end up with pain. So I wanted to elaborate on this point a little bit as far as why one should give up the over-endeavor for knowledge, specifically impersonal knowledge, and why the path of bhakti is so, well, one could say attractive, but also in a very practical way, applicable, especially for this age and for where we are. And so, because Lord Brahma is giving us this wonderful, wonderful presentation, this wonderful juxtaposition of these two terms. So when we look at Gyan Marg, I'll speak about Gyan Marg first, because there are two ways to offer respects to somebody. You can either say their name first because they're the most respectful, or you can say their name last because they're the highest. Sometimes when we give a Mangala Charana or we give pranams, we say the most respectful person first, or we end with the most respectful person. Both are okay. So I'll start with Gyan Marg because Gyan Marg is lower, and I'll glorify bhakti afterwards. So Gyan is extremely, extremely difficult. And Lord Brahma uses multiple words here to underline that it's full of botheration. He says kleshala. Klesha means like adibhotik, adiadmik, adidaivik, kleshas, miseries, problems, difficulties. Kleshala, it's full with difficulties. Klishyanti, it's a struggle the whole way through. Why is it a struggle the whole way through? Because in Gyan Marg, the prerequisite for even starting is complete purity. Absolute purity. In order to be a Gyani proper, you have to be completely free from material desires, and you can't act on those on any material desires that may come up at any time, otherwise you forfeit everything in Gyan Marg. There is no reprieve, there is no shelter, you just have to start over. And it's a long process, very long process of attaining self-realization. You must try and try and try, and yoga is the same way. This is why, actually, even to qualify to practice Gyan, one has to undergo Nishkam Karma Yoga until he is completely unattached from the fruits of his works. Until one can come to the stage of working without any desire, Nishkam, to enjoy the fruits that result of that work, that result from that work, he cannot be a Gyani. So even the effort that is required just to start this process is unbelievably difficult and practically impossible for Kali Yuga, for the situation that we are, because this presupposes the idea that one has gotten that purification from an early stage in life. It presupposes that one is raised in a culture where this is even possible. But for somebody who's just running around in the material world, in America, or in Europe, or even in India nowadays, because India is just following the West, we go through, if we're lucky, 15, if we're a little more lucky, 20, 25, 30 years of not even karmi life, vikarmi life. Everything's meant for my enjoyment. And then we're expected, how can one make the switch to Gyan from that? It's not possible. It requires the cultivation of this Nishkam Karma Yoga. So one can't even undergo Gyan. One can't even undergo Gyan in this age unless they go through a rigorous process. And that's just getting to the process. Once you're practicing Gyan or yoga, because they're very similar, they differ a little bit in their goals, because the yogis, at their highest, they aspire for Paramatma, and at their lowest, they aspire for siddhis. And we can see with Gyanis, especially in Kali Yuga, at their highest, they aspire for Brahman, and then at their lowest, they just kind of fall back into aspiring for a nice position, because their goal is very abstract, and if they can't reach it, then they just kind of enjoy what they gain through the practice of Gyan, which is actually abominable for the path of Gyan Marg. But if you're on the path, like I said earlier, and you happen to slip a little bit, you have to start completely over. And this is illustrated nicely by the story of Vishvamitra and Menaka. So Vishvamitra, he was a sage, and he was jealous, I believe, of Vasishtha Muni's power, because before he was a king, and he went to the ashram of Vasishtha Muni, and he saw that he had a Surabhi cow. And a Surabhi cow is a wish-fulfilling cow. Anything that you ask, it's like a desire tree, it will give. And so he saw this cow that Vasishtha served him and his whole armies with, and he said, I want this, I'm the king, you should give me this cow. And then Vasishtha Muni said, you're bewildered by your lust, I'm a Brahmin. You're a king. You're not supposed to beg. And furthermore, why are you begging from a brahmana? And so Vishvamitra got angry and he said, if you don't give me that cow, there's going to be problems. Give me the cow. And so then his army squared up. And then, just to make a long story short, Vasishtha Muni's cow, on his order, manifested an army that destroyed Vishvamitra's army. And this hurt his ego like anything. But then Vishvamitra realized, what is the point of being a kshatriya, of being the so-called ruler, if the brahmanas actually have so much power? I want to be a brahmana. I want to be a brahmarshi. I will become the most powerful sage in the universe. And so he sat down to do austerities. And he sat down and he started to perform this ashtanga yoga. He's meditating. Lord Brahma actually came to him and said, okay, I like what you're doing. You can become a Rajarshi. A Rajarshi, there are different classes of yogis. And so a Rajarshi is one of the middle classes. Not low, but it's not a Brahmarshi. A Brahmarshi, the demigods are actually afraid of somebody becoming a Brahmarshi, because their power will actually eclipse the demigods. And then there can be problems. And so Lord Brahma came to Vishvamitra and he said, you can become a Rajarshi. How about that? And Vishvamitra, at first he thought, yes, this is what I want. And then he thought, no, I'm going for a higher goal than this. I want to be a Brahmarshi. So that's one thing I didn't even think about, is that even on the path of yoga or Gyan, Other people may try to subvert you in such a way, and you're not protected by Bhagavan. But so he endeavored further, and he started to meditate, and the demigods became afraid, and they thought, oh man, he's going to do it. He's going to attain this stage. And so we have to find a way to stop him, because the demigods, even though it's Swarga, they're always afraid that their position also is going to be taken. It happens. Bali Maharaj and the demons, because of Indra's offense, their power reduces, and then the demons are able to take Swarga from them, and they're banished. And so Indra thought, okay, here's what we'll do. We'll send the most beautiful apsara to Vishvamitra, and in that way he'll lose his austerities, and then he can't become a Brahmarshi. And so they sent Menaka, and just by the sound of her tinkling ankle bells, Vishvamitra's mind was disturbed. And then he and her met, and they had a child. And afterwards he was thinking, no, I've given up all of my austerities, all of my boons are now useless. And he had to start over again. And there's another instance I don't remember, so I won't paraphrase it. But it happens again. And it happens to him something like 3 or 4 times. And then finally, he has the wherewithal to push through and to do enough austerities to become a Brahmarshi. But if one doesn't hold this rigorous standard, one loses everything at the slightest of falls. So Gyan Marg is so difficult. Kleshala, it's full of problems, full of difficulties. This is what Lord Brahma is pointing out. And indeed, Lord Krishna, he says in the Bhagavad Gita, he says, Klesha dikataraste-sham avyakta sakta-cetasam avyakta higatil-dukam deva-deha-vad-viravapyate. Arjuna asks him, okay, you've spoken a lot about jnana and a lot about bhakti, and you just got done glorifying bhakti, but then you showed me your impersonal form. I need to know with certainty which of the two is better. Is the jnani better or is the bhakta better? I need to know this. Please tell me. Give me a straight answer. And so Lord Krishna, he speaks this verse. He says, for those whose minds are attached to the unmanifested impersonal feature of the Supreme, advancement is very troublesome. Again, kleshala. He says, klesho dika taras tesham. It's full of klesha. He uses the same terminology Lord Brahma uses here. It's full with difficulty. It's so difficult. To make progress in that discipline is always difficult for those who are embodied. Until one reaches liberation, difficulty, difficulty, difficulty. It's difficult. It's tough. It's hard. There's no sweetness. You're challenged at every chance. You are on your own volition and your own strength, trying to remain detached. It's so hard. And so Lord Krishna affirms this in Bhagavad Gita. And even if one is successful, because again, we're looking at a presentation by Lord Brahma where he's putting bhakti and jnana side by side. He's saying for those who cast out jnana, it's like this, and for those who cast out bhakti, it's like this. But even if you're successful in jnana yoga, what is the result? The highest result one can get through jnana yoga is Sayujya Mukti, is this impersonal liberation, which is also glorious. It's a type of mukti. We can't, you know, as Vaishnavs, we put it down because we have a much higher goal, which is what our scriptures align with. But Sayujya Mukti it's still a form of mukti. But from the Vaishnav perspective, even if you're successful in jnana, the only thing you can get is that which Sri Shukadev cast out himself. He already had it. He already was a Jivan Mukta. He was completely free from the modes of material nature, and he's described as an Atmaram. He was situated in the happiness that comes from the soul, from the self. This is Brahman realization. He was already on the platform of Brahman realization, and he heard some verses from the Bhagavatam, and he eagerly left that and ran towards bhakti, ran towards this Shreya Shritim Bhaktim, this highest, most auspicious, beautiful path of bhakti. And then I was remembering something beautiful from Chaitanya Chandramrita that Prabhupada quotes numerous times in his books. Sri Prabodhananda Saraswati, he says, Kaivalyam Nadakayate, indeed for the bhakta, Kaivalya, this Sayuja Mukti, is something like hell. Not only is it not desired, but it's a terrible, terrible thing because one can't reciprocate with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One abhakta, think, what is this thing? I don't want this. This is terrible. Terrible, terrible, terrible. Therefore, Lord Brahma, he says, Gyane Udapasya, give up this gyan. Gyane Prayasam Udapasya. Don't endeavor for that. He leads this famous verse from the Bhagavatam with this phrase, Gyane Prayasam Udapasya. Give it up, give it up, give it up. Take up bhakti. Hear from the devotees. Relish Krishna Katha. Do that. And so then we look at the other side of the coin. What is the qualification for bhakti and what is required from bhakti? First, bhakti guarantees success. From a slight amount of bhakti being performed. In the 11th canto, there's a really nice verse that describes how one can progress on the path of bhakti if one is surrendered and having taken it up. Yan astaya naro rajan na pramadyeta kadhichit davan nimurya ya netre va netre na skalen na pated iha. O king, one who accepts this process of devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead will never blunder on his path in this world. Even while running with eyes closed, he will never trip or fall. Bhakti Devi herself and Krishna himself, they guarantee success on this path of bhakti. In one place in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna writes this in a very interesting... Srila Prabhupada writes this in a very interesting way. He says that actually Krishna will drag one back to Godhead. And a lot of times we take this and we use it in all the wrong ways because, you know, we can hang ourselves with the Shastra just as we can justify, or we can move forward with the Shastra. But the import of this statement is that once started, the benefit never goes away. And so we also, everybody, most devotees know this verse. I learned it very early on. Neha bikrama nashyosti pratyavaya navidyate swapam apyasya dharmasya trayate mahato maya. Swapam apyasya. Swapam means very little. Alpa means little, like alpa medasa means low intelligence. Swa-alpa means very, very little. Very little bhakti performed can save one from the most dangerous type of fear. It never goes away. Prabhupada writes in the purport there that if one moves to 7%, even if he falls away and does all nonsense, when he comes back to bhakti, he starts from 7%, or 50%, or 94%, or 1%. It's eternal. It never goes away. So, the Gyanis, they lose everything. Even if they get to 99.999%, they come to the precipice of self-realization, they lose everything if they fall. The Bhakta, if he just comes by a Harinam or meets the devotees at a program and takes prasadam and chants, we can call that 1%. We can call that the initiation of the process. It never goes away. It's not possible for that to be removed. So already, bhakti looks pretty good in comparison to gyan. And Krishna also makes a statement in 9:30 of the Bhagavad Gita. He says, not only for someone who is starting bhakti is this applicable, but even for someone who does the most horrible thing. Apichet su duracharo. Durachar means bad activities. Achar means activities. Dura means bad. Su duracharo. The most abominable thing that you can possibly think of. The worst thing. He is still to be considered he's still to be considered a saintly soul because he's rightly situated. Again, this is another verse that we can use in so many ways and has been used in the past in so many ways to justify other things. But the point here is that because this person has taken up bhakti and they did something in bhakti, there is nothing that can remove that. They may have to undergo lots of suffering for whatever this sudarachara is, But at the end of the day, in some future life, in their next life, the life after that, they're going to start again from 13%, 18%, 1%, 57%, wherever it is that they're at. So what to speak of something like Vishvamitra? I mean, someone like Vishvamitra, in that circumstance, Menaka was the most beautiful woman from the heavenly planets. And she came, and he became enticed, and he lost everything. That's not even abominable, actually, from our standard in Kali Yuga. People dedicate their lives to the wanton pursuit of sense gratification through sex life. What to speak of somebody who was subverted by the demigods, who lost everything. In bhakti, nothing can take away. Except maybe Vaishnava Parad, but that's another topic. And even that, there are different opinions that maybe it's destroyed, or maybe you just have to undergo a tremendous amount of suffering until you come to your senses and relieve yourself of that. But that's a tangent, so I won't go in that direction. For the purpose of this conversation and for the purpose of this lecture, we'll stick with the point that bhakti is not destroyed in comparison to mukti. Mukti can be destroyed at any step with a slight fall. And so then this word kleshala there is there in Brahma's prayer. He says kleshala, which means full of klesha, like I explained earlier. And this reminds me of Rupa Goswami's use of the term klesha da, which means the deliverance from all miseries. This is one of the beginning results of bhakti. There are two things that happen in the beginning of bhakti when you're practicing very early on. That's shubhada, it's shubhada and kleshagni, not kleshada, because that would mean the giving of all distress. Shubhada means all auspiciousness arises, and kleshagni means all distresses are removed from one's life. And this happens somewhere around, it happens before Bhajan Kriya, and it happens somewhere around Shraddha, association with devotees, and Guru Padashraya, which is taking direct shelter of a guru. So the jnanis, through their whole process, they take initiation into a certain line, they undergo a process, they start purifying themselves, but it's full of kleshala, this botheration and problems. But for a bhakta, engaging in bhakti, kleshagni, at the very beginning, practically before he's even gotten a real start in what the bhakti that Rupa Goswami has given and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has given, practically before he even gets a real start, kleshagni, all miseries are destroyed. So, then we come to the question, but what is the qualification for bhakti sadhana? How does one do it? And how does one begin? And so then there's another beautiful verse from the 11th canto. Shradalur mat katashrinvan subhadra lokapavani ghayan anusmaran karma janma cha bhinayan muhu. A person with natural faith should constantly hear topics about me, should sing and remember my topics which purify the world and enact my exploits and birth. This is from the 11th canto, the 11th chapter, text 23. And our acharyas comment that this word shradhalur, being at the very beginning of this verse, indicates that the qualification for bhakti sadhana is some faith. The qualification to perform bhakti is a little bit of faith. And then he goes to list the things, or Krishna himself lists the things that comprise of bhakti. So Gyan Yoga is austerities and difficulty and neti-neti, and if you mess up, it's all gone. Whereas Bhakti Yoga, we hear the Bhagavatam, and we develop faith in hearing the Bhagavatam. We sing, we do kirtan. We remember what we heard and what we sang, and we think about it, and we incorporate it into our life, anusmarana. We make our life a meditation on Krishna. And what else do we do? Chabinayan muhu. We constantly do all these things, and we do plays and beautiful presentations showing Krishna's leelas and showing the leelas of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. We do these wonderful things on the basis of a little bit of faith. That is bhakti sadhana. That is what we do. And then in the Atika to that, in explaining this this faith that is the requirement for bhakti sadhana, Sri Vishwanath, he quotes another beautiful verse from the 11th canto that's quite well known. Yajichchaya matkatadu jatashadas tuya puman nat nirvino nati shakto bhakti yogo syasiddhida. If by unexpected association with devotees one develops faith in my topic, such a person, being neither very disgusted with nor attached to material life, is qualified for bhakti and will achieve perfection. So that shraddha, which is the requirement for bhakti, it simply comes from the mercy of a devotee. We run into the devotees, which is all of our experience. We meet the devotees, we meet one devotee, and then they plant the seed. And then we do all of these wonderful things. And so from the beginning to the end, compared to Gyan Yoga, bhakti is like, I would use the word vacation, but it somehow doesn't seem to fit. It's just an amazing experience in comparison to all of this hard, difficult austerity. And what is Krishna saying in this verse? He says, one can't be too attached or too disgusted with the material world. So our process isn't even one of becoming completely frustrated with material existence and giving it up because it's horrendous and terrible and awful. Because this type of austerity, this type of renunciation, is not conducive for having a soft heart. So it's even easier in that sense, because all we have to do is what was listed in this previous verse. We hear the Bhagavatam from devotees, we hear Krishna Katha, we chant, we dance, maybe if we're inclined, we do a play or two. We do whatever we have to do to remember Krishna. Rupa Goswami says in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, he says, yena kena prakarena mana Krishna niveshaya. Somehow or other, by any means necessary. Yena kena prakarena means by any means at your disposal, remember Krishna. And then we hear that there are two rules in bhakti. Always remember Krishna and never forget Him. Every other rule is subservient to these two rules. So here, Lord Brahma paints a beautiful picture for us of the juxtaposition of jnana and bhakti. And thus, at the end of this, he says, Shreya Shritim Bhakti Mudasya, why would you give up this highest path of bhakti? For those who do that, they get nothing but suffering. Why would you give it up? There's no point to give it up. Why take up anything else? Shreya Sritim Bhaktim Udasya. One must engage. It's 8:20 now. I had another point that I wanted to share, and I think I'm going to opt to do that. It should take 5-10 minutes, so we can most likely end on time, maybe have time for one question if it's there. But Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that one who worships me is not really my devotee. One who worships my devotees is my devotee. And so, one thing I was reminded of when I was studying for this and reading about this is a very nice point which brings more and more out the glories of Bhakti Devi. And so I'd like to share that with you all, if you'll allow me. And there's a secret that our acharyas give, even about Gyan Marg. And the reason this secret is given is one, to establish the supremacy of Bhakti Devi, and two, to show us that Gyan Marg is, why would we ever consider going after that if we've given an opportunity, if we've been given an opportunity to undergo the process of bhakti and to embark on this journey of bhakti yoga. And that secret is that even Gyan Marg is impossible without bhakti. Even the jnanis, they're unable to get liberation without bhakti. And so the praman for this is prayena bhakti yogena satsangena vinodhava no paya vidyate samyak prayanam hi satam aham. O Uddhava, I am directly the best shelter for the devotees. If one does not engage in bhakti, which arises usually by associating with my devotees, there is no means of escaping from material existence. And Sri Vishwanath, he comments that the import of this verse is that no process for self-realization, not only bhakti, no process can bear fruit. It can bear its true fruit, or mukti, because that's the result of all other processes at their prime, without bhakti. And in the Gita, Sri Vishwanath gives us two pramans for this. He says, bhaktyamam abhijananti, Krishna says in the Gita. And then later on in the Bhagavatam, he says, bhaktyaham ekaya graya. And Sri Vishwanath says, this doesn't just mean Bhagavan. This means Brahman and Paramatma also. Krishna is speaking, especially in the Gita, he's speaking in a general way about all the different types of self-realization, because he's giving nishkam karma, he's giving jnana, and he's giving bhakti yoga. And he says, bhaktya mam abhijananti. One cannot know me any other way than through bhakti. And so then, being intrigued by this, because when we read these things, naturally we become intrigued when we find an interesting point, and then wanting to understand it further, I remembered because in the beginning of his Madhurya Kadambani, Sri Vishwanath, he explains the independence of bhakti. And he explains how bhakti is independent of all external circumstances and only descends through bhakti. I believe the verse is bhaktya sanjataya bhaktya, that bhakti comes from bhakti. It doesn't come from the Lord's mercy, because the Lord is partial. It is the Lord's mercy, bhakti shi. She is the Lord's mercy because she's his energy, but she's also independent from him in her will. And so bhakti, she decides who gets bhakti and who does not. It's only her decision. Therefore bhakti is causeless, because it doesn't come from any other cause other than Bhakti Devi's desire to give herself, which, for technical understanding, manifests through the devotee's desire to give her, because devotees are a direct manifestation of Krishna's Kripa Shakti, of Bhakti Shakti. But the point that I'm going for here is, in this verse of Madhurya Kadambani, Sri Vishwanath explains that the wise, and he's speaking about the jnanis, who actually attain self-realization, they know that even the process of jnana can only give results by the mercy of bhakti. And then he says something very interesting. He says, such bhakti takes a secondary role to jnana, and this bhakti is called sattviki bhakti, or bhakti that is of the mode of goodness. And then he raises the question, but I just explained to you how bhakti is independent, so how then can one call bhakti independent? How can she become subordinate to jnana? Because it doesn't make sense from an outside perspective. How can bhakti be simultaneously independent, but then be subordinate to jnana in the process of impersonal liberation? It's a good question. And then he answers it, because this is the nature of the Vedic way of understanding. You present a doubt and then you answer it, so as to clear the doubts in others. Because it is by Bhakti Devi's mercy that she becomes subordinate in this situation. It's not that she's actually subordinate. And he gives a story in order to underline this point, which is very, very nice. He answers this doubt by citing the story of Sri Vamanadeva. So Vamanadeva was prayed for because the demons, as I said earlier briefly, they had taken over Swarga. They had taken over the kingdom of Indra, and the demigods were banished. And so Aditi, she couldn't bear that her sons were in such a bad position. And so she prayed, and she did the Payavrata ceremony in order to have a son who would save her son Indra and give him his kingdom back. And so Vamandev appeared as the little brother of Indra, because he's also Aditi's son. And throughout his entire life, or manifestation, throughout his Leela, he acted as the younger brother of Indra. He acted subordinate to Indra. He went to Bali Maharaj and he begged on his behalf, on Indra's behalf, to get the kingdom from Bali Maharaj for 3 steps of land. And by that way, he played a trick and he got the kingdom from Bali Maharaj. And then he gave it to Indra. He didn't keep it himself. He acted in a subordinate position to Indra. But the wise know that this doesn't make Vamandev subordinate to Indra. This doesn't mean that Indra is the master of Vamandev. This actually, in a beautiful way, highlights Vamandev's superiority in his ability to willingly take a subordinate position, even though he has all power, and then act for the benefit of Indra. And so similarly, Sri Vishwanath says, Bhakti Devi asks, acts, it's a tough one, Bhakti Devi acts with Gyan. She takes a subordinate position on her own volition just in order to give empowerment to that sadhana. And then this goes deeper and deeper. I won't explain it more because it becomes very philosophical. Actually, bhakti is the active principle in this way in all processes of everything that happens in the material world. Bhakti is the activating principle. Our acharyas explain this in the Bhagavad Gita in the 18th chapter. But this is the glory of Bhakti Devi, that she's so merciful that even to give jnanis their, even to give jnanis the result of their sadhana, as long as they're not mayavadis. And see, this is the difference here that we're given. Prabhupada tells us mayavadis and brahmavadis. Mayavadis, they directly deride the form of the Supreme. They say that he is just, Vishnu is just Brahman who has been contaminated by sattvagun. So because of this philosophy, they cannot even actually attain Sayujya Mukti. They're always bewildered. Therefore, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, I cast them down. Those who deride my form, I cast them down, I cast them down, I cast them down. Further and further. They only stay in samsara. They go to lower and lower regions and they stay here. But for someone who's not inimical to the Lord, but wants this jnana, this result of jnana, this Sayujya Mukti, bhakti mercifully gives them what they're asking for by becoming seemingly subordinate to Gyan Yoga. But this is her glory. This is another aspect of the glory of Bhakti Devi. So I just shared that because it's nice to glorify the Lord's devotees. And who is a devotee? Everyone is a devotee because of Bhakti Devi, so to speak. So these were my thoughts and what I could piece together. If there are any comments or questions, we have time for one or two. It's 8:30. Corrections, please.
Really nice class. Thank you.
Thank you.
One thing that comes to mind, a question, is to try to understand the statement that well documented that you made of the jnanis having to start again, from the very beginning. They lose whatever effort they made. And also from the statement that Krishna makes in that 12th chapter, when he says, very troublesome, but eventually they will come to me. They will get to me.
Yeah.
And Bahunan Jamanantayas, many thousands, the Jnanavam Manprapadyante, they come to that position.
Yeah.
So,
and he says that in the verse before, yeah? One before, 12:4, yeah.
Yes,
he says like this.
Krishna say, in my opinion, the Bhakta is better.
Yeah.
It's the best path. The impersonalist, the jnani, he will reach me, but with so much trouble.
Yeah.
So it's not that it's wrong. It will reach him, but it's a very troublesome path.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
And then the statement that, when they have to start again in the next life, Suchinam, they take birth in a family, in a Suchi family.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
A family of Brahmanas. The fallen yogi will, again, have a position in which they can continue. So even in this case, we're speaking of, the fallen yogi, we also understand from the perspective of the devotee, but the devotee takes, in general, birth in a family of devotees and continue. But
yeah.
The answer is also sort of general for fallen yogis.
Yeah.
And so The fallen yogis would take many thousands of lives, according to Krishna. But, you know, they're sort of in sort of progressive, you know.
Mm.
So to try to understand how they lose everything, what is that they lose? Because they still get a situation, you know, out of the piety of their, and the process of the, you know, transcendence, they still continue in one sense.
Mm.
And that still gets sort of reawakened, and in one sense attaches to that last fantastic point that you brought out of bhakti also sort of being, you know, the overriding or the driving principle behind. So it's interesting just to go to understand what is exactly what they lose, and which we get an idea of, you know, but it's not necessarily that they, you know, sort of lose everything, because they still get the situation, you know, that they can continue, presumably.
So my understanding here, a very nice question, thank you. My understanding here is that because the jnani falls because of acting on the impulses of the senses, and sensory purity, the purity of the antakarana through nishkam karma yoga, is required in order to even start jnana. In that sense, when they fall all the way back to the beginning point of jnana. So they may still have some karmic benefit that they'll get because they performed lots of austerity. It's not that that's a wiped out, because that's in the realm of karma. That's still an active principle. It's not that that is wiped out when they fall. Not that you become a jnani, you do austerity for 10,000 years, you know, and then, or 10 years in Kali Yuga. Say you manage to go to the jungle and sit and meditate for 10 years, you know, and do Ashtanga Yoga and actually stop thinking about the opposite sex, and you just eat unsalted rice and dal. It's not that if you fall from that state of consciousness by indulging in sense gratification, that you're not going to reap the benefit karmically of those austerities. So in that sense, we see this carries on, that because somebody did some austerities, he will take birth in a wealthy family, as Prabhupada says. And if he was particularly religious, and he may take birth in a family of yogis or brahmanas, which is the common understanding. He'll take birth in a family of people who are devoted. But this also, this generally tends to lean towards the devotees. In my understanding, I'm paraphrasing here, and I can't quote verses on this one, so take everything I say with a grain of salt. But what he's losing is the fact that because he indulged in sense gratification, which is an indication that he's not pure, which is an automatic disqualification for jnana, means he has to go all the way back to the beginning point. With Vishvamitra, it's a little bit different, because the power of his austerities, the benefit that he was trying to cash in for something else that was also material, was lost. So there's also that. If one's goal isn't mukti, and one's goal is something material, and it's yoga siddhis, in order to get yoga siddhis, you have to build up your bank account, and then you cash them in. And you actually lose all of those yogic austerities. But for a jnani who's going for mukti, my understanding is that he loses all qualification, and he's no longer qualified to practice jnana. So he'll either have to practice nishkam karma yoga until he's purified again, or if somehow he wakes up and he becomes detached again, he'll still have to start over with his endeavor. And you said something also about the kind of continuation that we see. And Krishna says that after thousands of lives, they will come to me. But this is one of the faults of English, is that in the English rendering of this verse, when Krishna says, after thousands of lives, they will come to me, it's not the same way that we would say in this verse, Neha Bikrama Nashosti, that they will always have the benefit. It's not a guarantee. It's the word is, it's actually, they can come to me. You know, if they keep trying in Gyan Yoga, because again, Gyan Yoga doesn't have any shelter other than one's own purity. If they can't, if they keep trying, then they can come to me. It is a path, it's valid, but therefore Krishna says it's full of, he says, klesho adhika. He says it's full of misery and difficulty. They can come to me, but it's not a guarantee. There's nowhere in the Shastra does it say that if one starts the practice of Gyan, he's guaranteed to finish it. That's the difficulty of Gyan. Whereas Bhakti, you start, you're going to finish. At some point, you're going to finish. And again, the only thing that's there is Vaishnava Aparad, that can maybe, some of our acharyas say you're gone forever, but that's also if you don't reconcile that, and then an understanding that's given is that you're going to go through horrible, horrible suffering until you beg for the forgiveness of the Vaishnavas that you offended, or the holy name if you can't beg them for forgiveness. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, or Sri Vishwanath explains this in Madhurya Kadambini. So there's no such guarantee for Gyan that when you start, you're going to finish. You start, and if you don't see it through, it's over. You know, and if you fail and you fall back, you have, whichever point you fall back to, maybe it's not zero, you still fall back and you fall down on the rungs. You have to climb back up, climb back up. If you fall again, climb back up. Maybe we can look at it like that. But there's no guarantee in this verse that it is being given. And this bhakti acting as the sattviki bhakti, she's passive. It's not bhakti that results from association of devotees. She's just activating the process of gyan. So also, the doubt may be raised that, oh, well, bhakti is there, so maybe that makes this a given, like, guaranteed thing. But that's not how she works there. She, again, she becomes subordinate. So she follows all the rules of gyan, and she just activates the process. So for the gyanis, she doesn't give this guarantee. She doesn't say, well, I'm here in your gyan, and so you're going to finish. It's only with proper swarup siddha bhakti that this guarantee is there, that one can run forward with his eyes closed and his hands behind his back with no fear. Only in swarup siddha bhakti. So that's the best answer I can think of. It's actually up to Subal Prabhu. I am just a...
Just a little discussion on that point. Subal Prabhu, you know, told that actually in Bhagavad Gita it is stated, we studied recently that in Bhakti Shastri, that there are two types of destinations for the practicing yogis. Mm-hmm. So like those who practiced for short time, they will go to the heavenly planets, and those who practice for long, long times, then only they will come to Nasuchinam Simatam Gihe Yoga Vrashta. That's loka. Not like they will take in nice Brahmin family, and because Krishna will give them privilege, okay, come again, continue your bhakti yoga and like that. And one more thing, then regarding that, about the loss of them, actually there are...
About the?
Well, you know, Subal Prabhu said, no, what did they lose?
Yeah.
Then, thing is that, is a yoga ladder. In yoga is just like a ladder.
Yeah.
They go up to the Paramatma realization stage. Because Gyani, they are trying to search, where is that, where is Krishna? And where is Krishna there? They went up to that, what is that called? Garbhadakhai Vishnu stage. Then, that means Paramatma, that means, perverted stage. That means, so then they cannot go to that Brahma, what is that Bhagavan stage? Bhagavan stage means above that stage. Somehow or other they fell down. But unlike to others, because Chaturvidha Bhajanti Mam, Jnana Sukritra, Artha Jigyans Arthati, Jnani Chavaratvarsa. That is that stage, Jnani stage, they are in Jnani stage. They are not like in other three stages. They have a surplus there, three. In Nectar of Devotion also, Rupa Goswami stated that out of these four Jnanis, better.
Yeah.
Better stage.
The jnani has come to realize the superiority of bhakti.
Superior than other three stages. So anyway, but like the same sloka of Subal Prabhu stated that, no, Bhunam Janmanamanti, Gyanavan Mamprabhu. Like they will take time, but they will not lose. Salpamapya Satraita Madhavad. Even if we do little endeavor in this path.
No. That's not the explanation of our acharyas, though. I'm sorry, Prabhu, but Gyan Marg has no such.
Yeah,
it has no such guarantee.
Mm-hmm.
That's for bhakti. Mm-hmm. Only in bhakti do you have a permanent guarantee that whatever progress you make, you keep. In Gyan Marg, you can lose it. You can give it up. That's why our acharyas say there's no point in undertaking Gyan Marg. You may keep some good karma from your austerities, but you do not keep eternal benefit, because that doesn't go in. It doesn't go. Neti neti does not go in Krishna's notebook, so to speak. You know. So that's my understanding.
Anyway, but again, if you go to another chapter 19 in Nectar of Devotion.
Okay.
There is two type of avas, rati avas and para avas.
Bhakti avas and?
Rati avas, para avas. Rati avas means it is coming to this speculative people, that's not like a jnani. Or by somehow or other, if they get a chance to associate with a devotee, or you know, got chance to render some service to, by chance, because the person is explaining, then they will come to Parava stage.
Yeah. If they get a chance to associate with the devotees. But if jnana is practiced on its own, and the devotees don't come and plant that seed, then Hogya. I think we have to end there. But thank you for your comments. And Jai Ho. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Sri Shri Kishore Kishore Ki Jai. Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai.